Once upon this planet Earth lived a man of humble birth, preaching love and freedom for his fellow man. He was dreaming of the day peace would come.
Welcome to WMNF Tampa, 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. You might also be listening on the WMNF app this morning. Happy Martin Luther King Day. I'm Sean Canaan, filling in today for Rob Lori. And joining us is Dr. Fred Harvey. Welcome to the show, Fred. How was your drive up from Sarasota?
It was a smooth and easy one. It was a beautiful day, actually.
And it's a perfect temperature out, and it's a wonderful holiday. Hope
yes.
Everyone's enjoying their day off.
A beautiful day. The doctor that we're missing today. That's a beautiful song. I heard it with Amy Goodman on the way up, and I just wanted to hear it again.
Yeah, we'll get to hear more of it maybe at the end of the show.
You know, he had so many quotes about love, such inspiration, that I just wanted to mention one. He said that love is the only force capable of transforming an enemy into a friend. And that's really apropos in my world, because my son and I were having breakfast this morning, and the back page of the Herald Tribune had a pseudo article. It was an ad, and it started off with, "Here's a new weapon for our war on neuropathy." And the entire field of Western medicine is based on violence. It's based on warring against something that's happening in your body. We've seen what happens on battlefields. Syria is not a pretty situation. The South, after the Civil War, was very ugly. War does not solve problems. And we can't keep warring against our bodies with the hope of helping them be healthy. Neuropathy doesn't need to be warred against. Neuropathy in all disease is a message from our bodies that something's out of balance. We need to find the love, to find the balance, to lift up our bodies so that disease isn't the issue that we make it. Focusing on disease, focusing on the problem is not the answer. Focus on the solutions. And there are so many. Focus on poverty, focus on famine, and we'll fix war. Fighting with guns to fix poverty and famine doesn't work, nor does it work to poison, slash, and burn a cancer out of our body, because cancer is simply our own cells acting differently because they've been pushed into a situation where they can't function normally.
And we're going to be taking your calls during this hour as well. If you'd like to call in, it's 813-239-9663. And before we begin, I want to mention that there is the Dr. Martin Luther King Day Parade in Tampa today, and WMNF 88.5 FM Community Radio cordially invites you to participate in the 31st Annual Martin Luther King Parade in Tampa. Our position is 78. We have the honor of welcoming Candy Lowe and her Black Business Tour bus to be with us. Parking is available at Koskinen Park Football Field for parade entrance only. The drop-off point is at 15th Street and the exit at 18th Street. You should join us at the staging area by 11:30, but be prepared to wait a bit. The parade is scheduled to begin at noon. It's 2 miles long, will be about 3 to 4 hours, and the parade route ends for walkers at Middleton High School. We're told the attendance will be the largest ever this year, so if you'd like to join WMNF in the Martin Luther King Parade, 11:30 at position 78. So Dr. Harvey, you were mentioning peaceful solutions, and if you're trying to get healthy, what's one of the better solutions of trying to become healthy?
One of the things is to eliminate toxins from our lives. We have an opportunity, actually, when we look at every piece of food that we eat, as to whether or not it's really food, or whether it's a tasty food-like substance filled with additives that are designed to preserve it, to texturize it, to flavor it, to preserve it, to do these things that aren't necessary if we eat whole foods. You know, if you pick up a piece of lettuce, you don't really need to worry about the additives in it unless it's been grown inorganically. But there's a difference between the way our nation looks at these processed foods and the way the European Union does. They're years ahead of us in terms of looking at toxins in our food. And when you look at the label on different things like Doritos or McDonald's French fries, that was one of my big sister Eve's favorite things, was the McDonald's French fry. 19 ingredients in the U.S. French fry, 4 ingredients in the U.K. French fry, which is potatoes, fat, salt, and sugar. Why do we need plasticizers in American French fries? I'm not really sure. Shelf life? They're supposed to be eaten hot and done. So I'm not sure what it's about. But the EU regulates and controls and bans many more substances than we do. Some of the things that we are allowed to have in our food here in this country that are not available in the EU are potassium bromate, which is the bleach in bleached flour. And it's a flour conditioner, they call it. And then another one called dicarbonamide. This is another bleach for cereals. And these bleaches are bleaching us. And bromine causes displacement of iodine in the thyroid and results in problems with the gland. Maybe part of the reason bleached flour and gluten are resulting in more Hashimoto's thyroiditis. BHA and BHT, those preservatives. Oh, brominated vegetable oils. There's an interesting one. That gives a stabilizing to the flavor of citrus in things like Mountain Dew and Gatorade. And that is something that interferes with memory loss, skin, causes nerve damage. Just not a good product. These things are readily available just to go to the store and buy when we know they're poisons.
And we can, there's a lot more, and we'll talk about dyes later perhaps, and some of the oils that are bad for you. We'll talk more about that, unless you want to talk that right now, but we could go to the phones and go to some emails if you'd like.
We could definitely do that.
Do you want me to read the email from Barb? She's asking if you'd like to start taking a probiotic, or she would like to start taking a probiotic, but she has a prolapsed mitral valve and read that you've been careful taking one if you have that issue. What are your thoughts on that? So that's an email that comes in from Barb.
So that's a good question. Two things involved there. One, prolapsed mitral valve is really a benign condition. It's not a valve disease. And unless it's associated with significant mitral regurgitation, which is a leaky valve, and that's a diseased valve, there's really no problem with it. The mitral valve prolapse results in virtually no clinical risk whatsoever, but people that have it often feel palpitations and get anxious because of the palpitations. And that one is easy. But the probiotic, I would get one that has maybe 10 to 30 billion colony-forming units or bacteria live in the capsule. And you want to get one that's got a variety of different organisms in it, not just single bacteria. And you want to look at the names of the bacteria, looking for like Acidophilus, Lactobacillus acidophilus, or Bifidobacterium bifidum. And those bacteria, when you see those names, you want to look after it and see if there's an alphanumeric designator after it, like some of the ones I use would have something like LA115 or BB12 or something. That means that the bacteria has been genetically identified, strained, and patented by a lab that leases it to other people to use. We know it's the bacteria, so we know it's a good human bacteria. I don't think there's any risk for someone with a mitral valve prolapse to start taking a nice low-level beneficial probiotic.
And there's another one that comes from Leah. She says, any suggestions to deal with metastatic clear cell endometrial cancer?
Well, that's a broad, broad question. First thing I would say, definitely get the oncologist opinion, because there are some interventions from Western medicine that may suppress the growth of these cells. But another thing we can do is start diet changes immediately. A high fiber diet helps with cancer. A low sugar diet helps. And going alkaline in your diet, in other words, removing sugars, fats, and heavy proteins and going to a much lighter diet, takes a lot of burden off the system. In the meantime, there are many nutritional supports out there, such as resveratrol and sulforaphane glucosinolate, the broccoli extract, curcumin, and green tea extract, all have some potential effect for suppressing cancer growth.
Do you want to take a phone call?
Sure.
All right. Well, I want to remind people that you're listening to 88.5 FM, WMNF Tampa. My name is Sean Canaan, and our guest, our host here is Dr. Fred Harvey. And this is the Health and Nutrition Show on 88.5 FM. And you can call in your questions at 813-239-9663, or you can email dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. Happy Martin Luther King Day to everyone. And we have Dave from St. Petersburg on the air. Hello, Dave.
Hello.
Hello, Dave.
Hello. Hey, Dr. Harvey.
How are you today?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you.
Happy holiday. Hey, I've been out to the VA a couple times. I got a respiratory problem. And it's they've given me steroids and antibiotics and inhalers. And it's going on 5 weeks now. It's not going away. And I cough real hard. I pass out. I fell out a bunch of times and hit the floor. I mean, what can you think it might be? Because they're not really telling me what it is.
Well, it could be a heck of a lot of things. But coughing hard and passing out is not something that's terribly uncommon. It's not a good thing, but it probably means that you've had some changes in your blood pressure due to the coughing. The vagus nerve controls heart rate, and it may have actually kicked in and caused you to lose your blood pressure there. The cough, it could be so many different things. And if it's persistent, chest x-rays, lab tests.
They've done all that.
Yes. So it could be allergies. If they've not actually diagnosed anything, you might try something for allergy. Sometimes I see people just get better with an antihistamine. If it works, then you know that that's an irritative source of your cough.
They've got albuterol, and then this other one has got Symbicort.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It seemed to work, and then it doesn't work. You know, it seems to come and go. It's like, works for 4 or 5 days, and then I get the wheezing back.
So
I got an appointment on Wednesday to go back out there. But
the question really then is, what's your exposure? What do you keep getting exposed to that's causing the wheezing? Is there mold in your house? So you're doing yard work? Somehow you're getting some kind of exposure.
I'm a carpenter for 35 years, and I do remodel. So there's all dust and dust from the house and stuff.
Maybe a better respirator would help when you're doing the dusty work.
Right, I guess. Okay. And I think that was about it.
Okay.
All right.
Best wishes.
All right. Thanks so much for your call. And I want to remind people that you can call 813-239-9663, and we'll take your calls. Dr. Fred Harvey is going to answer your questions about health and nutrition here on 88.5 FM, WMNF Tampa. I should say that we're also filming this for Facebook Live. It's on Facebook Live. If you go to facebook.com/WMNF News, you can watch this show. And you can also email your questions in to dj@wmnf.org. Gary writes, thank you for the great show and for all you do and for a very well said intro to the show. And Gary is wondering what you recommend for local allergies. He has post-nasal drip, which makes him cough and has throat congestions. And at times he feels pretty run down from it. He's been using flutasicone daily for years. Sorry, I don't know how to pronounce that one. And
most people call it Flonase because it's an over-the-counter.
Okay.
But yes, that's the generic for it. So yeah, he's tried it looks like he's tried honey and nasal sprays. The fluticasone is a steroid nasal spray. He also does saline spray. He's doing a lot for this. And the question he has really is, honey, is that going to be useful? And would immunotherapy be useful? That's the desensitizing shots you get from an allergist. My first choice is actually, some local honey is not a bad idea. I'm not sure how much it helps, but people do talk about it. I use a combination of stinging nettle leaf, N-acetylcysteine, bromelain, and vitamin C. It's a great combination that helps with allergies. And I started taking mine last week because the mangoes are already blooming. Everything's out of sync, and I'm concerned that oak and pine and cedar are going to be following much more soon than usual.
Yeah, it's spring already.
Yes, so I'm on my natural dehist combination there to clean up the system because it really helps stabilize and reduces. I've not needed to use the fluticasone nasal spray for years because of that. So best wishes.
All right, well, thanks for that email. Let's go back to the phones, and we have Kay in Dunedin. Hi, Kay.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome, Kay.
I have a condition that they call anti-phospholipid syndrome.
Yes.
And since 1993, I've had about 7 or 8 blood clots. And I'm just wondering, where do I go with this? How do I treat it? What should I be eating or not eating?
Excellent question. So anti-phospholipid syndrome is an autoimmune disease. Phospholipids are components of all cell membranes. And when you get a trigger, and it's unknown specifically what trigger combined with your genetics, some people start attacking the fats that the body makes. And so it really deserves a broader evaluation of what might be triggering it. And so looking at food sensitivities would be a good place to start. But before you even go there, you could just eliminate major food allergens like dairy, soy, egg, and gluten. And if you take those major proteins out, you may actually just have a reduced burden on the immune system that allows it to breathe a bit, so to speak. And then probiotics and some fish oil and other anti-inflammatories could be useful. That's the way I would start with some food sensitivities. And looking at the microbiome in the gut, doing a comprehensive stool analysis to see whether you have the appropriate amounts of lactobacillus or bifidobacterium, whether you have parasites, which could trigger things, and also yeast, which could also be a trigger.
I do take brewer's yeast. I'm wondering if that, or unfortified yeast.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that should be eliminated.
That's a good thing to get out of the diet at the moment, too, because yeast can be a trigger. It's an immune stimulant.
Okay,
thanks so much for your call.
Thank you very much.
Another thing, just to think about it, is to get rid of bad oils, rancid fats, no trans fats, no fried food, and go to really clean, simple oils. Olive, organic sunflower is a really good oil that helps to replace your cell membranes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Kay. And we have another question about oils here that comes from Nina. She says, is wild Alaskan salmon still a good source of protein and omega-3s?
Absolutely. It's one of the best sources for it because wild Alaska salmon has high omega-3s and it really is high quality protein. Yes, I would recommend wild salmon anytime.
All right, we're going to go back to the phone. Nikki in Largo has been holding. Thanks so much, Nikki. What would you like to ask?
Oh, hi. Hello, doctor.
Hello.
I really liked your introduction. That was spot on.
Thank you.
I've been having, for several weeks now, fatigue, especially after I eat a meal, and most particularly when it's a large meal. And I've found that I can't eat a large meal at all in the evening. I have major indigestion from it, and all I want to do is go to bed. Do you have any suggestions or recommendations for maybe dealing with that?
Well, I would, the timing there is really interesting, and it could be that it simply is just too much food in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it could be that you have sugar problems, because a large meal could actually raise your sugar and then raise your insulin and make you tired after that. It could be that you're not tolerating the fats in it. I would keep a food and symptom diary and see if there's any specific foods that are triggering it more than others. And in the meantime, change the way you eat. Simply eat a bigger breakfast and a bigger lunch and just have a snack kind of meal for dinner. There are a lot of people that are doing intermittent fasting and not even eating dinner, you know, just eating breakfast and lunch, or not eating breakfast and eating lunch and dinner. It would probably be best for you to skip that late meal. Eat nothing after, say, 5 o'clock.
Okay.
And then for indigestion, you could try some digestive enzymes and see if that would help.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Nikki. Thanks for calling in.
All right. Thank you, doctor.
You're welcome.
Thanks so much for that call. And I want to say Judah texts in from the 941 area code and says, this is the first time I've heard a doctor making sense. So thank you for that comment, Judah.
Oh, thank you, Judah.
we have Grant in Clearwater. Hi, Grant.
Oh, hi. Thanks, doctor, for doing the program every other week.
You're welcome.
It's really helpful.
Thanks for being out there listening.
Yeah, oh yeah, I always do. Follow up to the earlier question about salmon. I'm going to lunch today, and I was going to have sort of a Mediterranean type of diet, which would be grilled salmon and small amount of potatoes and vegetables. But I got to thinking about the grilled salmon. It's farm-raised, I'm sure.
Yes.
And I wanted to know your thoughts about eating farm-raised fish, specifically salmon. I know it's not as good as wild salmon, but it's my choice today. So what do you think of farm-raised?
I think we have to make some expeditious choices. Whole salmon, whether it's farmed or wild, is still a better product than salmon nuggets or, you know, square grouper that we can get at fast food chains out of a deep fryer. So it'd be a fine choice. It would be best if we could get it wild. It would be best if we could make sure that the farming is done ethically, because we have unethical farming too. So there's so many layers to it, but when we're making whole food choices, make the best you can in the circumstances that you've got and avoid the things that are most toxic. We have to be reasonable. We have a life to live, and we have a system that's running around us that we can't control.
Right. Okay, and then the second question is, again, a follow-up. I normally eat this meal at about 8 o'clock at night. I eat my my organic salad at about 2, and then I eat this heavier kind of high protein meal at 8. Would you recommend flipping that around and having the heavier protein fish meal at 1 or 2 in the afternoon, and then having a salad in the evening? Is that a better routine?
Yes, I believe it is. And actually, another way to look at it, I've tried really diligently to push my dinner time back. I try to eat when I get home from work and then do other things in the evening, because I want to be done eating by 7 o'clock. 6:30 would be great, but I can rarely get to that point. But eating at 8 for me is just too late, because I want to be in bed early enough so I can arise with the sun, which I do. And if I don't get to bed early because I've eaten too much, it disrupts everything. So look at how you're planning the day and see what works for you.
Yeah, well, I'm more planning the night, because if I do that about midnight, I'm laying there in bed, can't sleep, and turns out, at least I think, I feel like I'm hungry. So then I go to the refrigerator and get a snack, which I know that's not good. So
but that's after you've eaten that big meal.
What's that?
That's after you've eaten the big nighttime meal.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
No, if I eat the big nighttime meal, I seem to make it through the night. But if I eat, well, maybe you're right. Maybe if I eat lighter, I'm not as hungry. I don't know.
It does seem to be that. If you eat lighter at night, you won't be as hungry later. But you have to make sure you're getting enough calories during the day. So calculate how many calories you're getting. If for your calorie output, you're not getting enough in, you're going to be hungry in the middle of the night. So make sure that those other meals have significant calories to hold you through the day.
Excellent. Okay, well, that helped. That's very helpful. Thank you again.
Glad to help.
Well, thank you for your call, Grant. And I want to let people know that you're listening to Dr. Fred Harvey on the Health and Nutrition Show here at WMNF Tampa, 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. It's 10:29 in the morning, and we are taking your calls. The number to call in is 813-239-9663. You can also watch on Facebook Live at WMNF News, and you can also listen on the web at WMNF.org. DJ at WMNF.org is our DJ, is our email, and 813-833, well, I'll get the text later on. Sorry about that.
Text 813-433-0885.
Thank you. All right, so we have an email from Confused Pete in Seminole, and he's writing, I'm pretty much eating good foods for dinner, but I'm struggling with breakfast. Don't know whether to do whole wheat waffle thing, healthy cereals and milk, but then again, what's a healthy cereal? Eggs, granola bars, bananas, and various fruits. So that's the question from Confused Pete.
So that's a good question, Confused Pete. Depends on what you're restricting out of your diet. It doesn't sound like a lot, and that could be a good thing. Organic cereals are really okay. I had cereal today. I do it maybe once a week. I had some nice, beautiful organic strawberries and some organic yogurt, and I just thought that was the combination I needed today. But how about eggs with fresh chopped green onions and a little bit of smoked salmon thrown in for a variety. Have that with a gluten-free bagel. Maybe a large citrus salad. The grapefruit are in right now, and they are delicious. And so are the navels and the honey bells. So have a citrus salad. Have some nuts with that. Maybe have some yogurt with it. How about just plain scrambled eggs thrown over top of a fistful of spinach? Nice, cold, crispy, organic spinach. Any of these things are good. How about even turkey sausages with some sautéed vegetables? There are all kinds of good things you can do for breakfast. Just throw it up. Don't stick with the thought that you have to have a waffle or a pancake or a cereal.
And here's an email that comes from Annie, and she's writing, "Thank you in advance. You're such a blessing. Appreciate you so much. My original email was asking about very severe hypersomnia, hypersomnolence, chronic fatigue. And she says she hopes her question helps other listeners that have this in a less extreme way." So what can you say about, maybe let me see if the original one. So severe hypersomnia.
Yes. Hypersomnolence. Yeah. So sleeping a lot can be a lot of different things. It could be hypothyroidism. Might want to get your thyroid checked. There could be sleep deprivation. You could have narcolepsy. There could be obstructive sleep apnea. There are so many things that could be associated with this, because chronic fatigue will come from chronic sleep deprivation. So this deserves a broad workup rather than a recommendation about what to do for sleep right now or for sleeping too much. There are stimulants out there you can take that even aren't like amphetamines. Provigil and Nuvigil are these alertness chemicals that just make your brain awake without stimulating the body. And I'm just not sure they would even be appropriate without knowing why the hypersomnolence is present.
Zach is asking, what steps should I be taking to heal Barrett's esophagus naturally, and what are your thoughts on the drug Nexium?
So Barrett's esophagus is a condition in which the normal mucus membrane skin of the esophagus has been transformed into a different type of skin. It goes from a columnar mucus-making epithelial skin to a squamous skin, which is like on the outside of your body, which is a very good barrier. The reason it turns like that is that the lower esophageal sphincter is not working and acid is coming up into the chest. And so the esophagus has to protect itself from the acid wash that keeps hitting it. So if we know that's what's causing it, we should back up a little bit and figure out how to stop that. And so increased stomach acid and increased stomach motility and decreased lower esophageal sphincter tone occur with histamine. Histamine is a chemical that induces the allergy symptoms, but it also does these other things to the gut. And so we want to look at histamine containing and histamine inducing foods. You can actually do a Google search for histamine intolerance diet and see that there are many foods that we use commonly that are potentially causative for heartburn and then Barrett's. And the foods include alcohol of any kind. Alcohol releases histamine, and it also inhibits an enzyme called diamine oxidase that breaks down the histamine. Red wine, in addition to the alcohol, has histamine in it. So you inhibit your ability to get rid of the histamine, and you add more into the system, and then you cause more to be released from the system, and you get heartburn. And so fermented foods of all kinds can contain more histamine. Aged cheeses, sour meats like summer sausages, tomatoes and avocados and strawberries are histamine triggers as well. So there's nuts, many nuts like cashews. So you need to look around for that, and they may be some of the triggers. In the meantime, a combination of some deglycerized licorice extract, which is really healing for the lining of the gut, aloe vera and arabinogalactan are really soothing for the lining of the gut. And if you do this regularly, you might actually heal the Barrett's and prevent it from going worse down that pathway towards cancer.
Well, thank you for the question. And now we'll go to the phones, Rosemary in Sarasota. And before we take your call, Rosemary, I should remind people that you can call 813-239-9663 if you'd like to ask Dr. Fred Harvey a question. All right, go ahead, Rosemary.
Hi there, Dr. Harvey.
Hi there.
I'm having a great day. What can you tell me about Raynaud's, however it's pronounced, syndrome?
Raynaud's.
She's visiting in town, and she has the ends of her fingers are like really white.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
She gets cold.
So Raynaud's is a condition where the peripheral vessels, arteries, get spasms, and you'll people who have this syndrome. When they go into the cold, their hands will blanch because the blood vessels will overreact. And then after they blanch, they turn blue and become quite painful. It's almost like you're getting a frostbite. But it's due to excess reactivity in the blood vessels in the autonomic nervous system and things to work on that to help with blood vessel responsiveness. There's no cure for this, but eliminating inflammation is a good thing. So getting rid of some of the usual toxins that we talk about, but adding in some B vitamins, especially niacin. Niacin is a blood vessel dilator. And so that alone, 500 milligrams of a time-release niacin may give you some actual flushing relief and let those fingers feel a little bit better. Capsaicin, hot pepper. Eating hot pepper is a vasodilator too. So you may find that that helps to improve the symptoms.
Okay. Well, great. Thankfully, she likes a little bit of spice in her food.
Good.
I'll suggest that. And she's a young, you know, she's 32 years old. Is there anything we need to be aware of, you know, going forward as she ages? Any, is it worth getting on any kind of testing? Or I saw online that it could be a symptom of lupus or...
Right. So Raynaud's phenomenon is a symptom complex that's triggered by a lot of things, but Raynaud's disease can actually really be a an autoimmune related disease. And so, yes, it's worth a workup here for autoimmunity, getting the anti-nuclear antigen, the ANA test, and a rheumatoid antigen, and erythrocyte sedimentation rate, an ESR. Those things will tell us if there's a process behind there that's causing it. Food sensitivities might also be a good choice, because if you have food sensitivities, you make your blood more thick, and that can result in some of this.
Okay. So the anti-nuclear test.
Yes.
Food sensitivity, I would say, would be first. And then what were, can you just rattle off another of the other tests?
The rheumatoid antigen and the sedimentation rate.
Oh, sed rate.
Yeah, sed rate.
Okay. Very good. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Harvey, and you have a wonderful day, as always.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You are just loaded with important information for all of us.
Glad to share it with you.
Thanks so much.
Bye. You're welcome.
Rosemary, thank you for your call. And if you'd like to join the phone call, the conversation, and ask Dr. Harvey a question, it's 813-239-9663. You're listening to WMNF Tampa, 88.5 FM. This is the Health and Nutrition Show. And we have a text message here from Martin, who says, how important is it to keep triglycerides low? Mine were 154. Now, in the 70s, after changes in diet and less beer drinking, frowny face. I'm 63 and take 20 milligrams of a statin for cholesterol. So thanks for that question, Martin.
Well, that's a really good question. And it ties together a couple of things. The production of cholesterol is tied to triglyceride production. The production of the LDL type cholesterol, the one you don't want to rise, is directly tied to triglyceride production. So that is also directly tied to alcohol consumption. The fact that your triglycerides are now in the 70s, having eliminated some of that alcohol, you may not need the statin at this point. I would actually consider reevaluating that scenario and keep the alcohol to less than 2 ounces a day, and you'll probably not have a triglyceride problem again.
Well, thank you for that email. Let's read one from Rena, who says, would you please talk about hiatal hernia? How would a person know if someone has it? So thanks for that question from Rena.
Very good question, Rena. Hiatal hernia is a situation where the top part of the stomach herniates through or slips through the diaphragm, and that creates a problem in that part of the stomach's up in the chest, and so you get this dynamic change in the pressures in that area, and you end up with a lot of heartburn usually. It's hard to tell if someone has it. I have had a couple of patients that say they actually felt the pop when the hernia went, or the stomach went up through the diaphragm when they were doing a straining, like lifting something, but almost no one mentions that. And so it's really hard to diagnose, but it can be diagnosed with an upper GI study, a radiographic study.
All right. Well, thank you for that email. We have an email from Jen who says, my daughter suffers from migraines. She has no medical issues. What natural remedies would you recommend for her to take on a daily basis to combat them? She's 16 years old.
Well, some of the things that we know trigger migraines are inflammation and toxicity and nutritional deficiencies. For the nutritional deficiencies, magnesium and B6 have been shown to help with diminishing migraines and frequency and intensity. And food sensitivities, again, can trigger these things. So it could be gluten, it could be dairy, it could be eggs, it could be yellow dye number 5. And that's another thing that the EU bans. We have these poisons in our rainbow of non-food substances that are available to eat. Yellow dye number 5 and number 6 and red dye number 40 are available in the US, but they're not available in England or the UK because they'll probably be available in England soon since they're leaving the UK. They'll fall in with the US model probably. So these dyes, the 5 is actually an allergy trigger and a mutagen, which means it can cause cancer. No specific evidence that it does cause cancer, but if it's a mutagen changing your DNA, it's likely that it could. Number 6 causes some allergy. Number 40, red, causes allergy and attention deficit problems. And all of them, because of their processing, can be contaminated with carcinogens, like this melamine that's been showing up and other things. NMDA, I think, is the one that shows up in the blood pressure medicines that have been recalled from China recently. Avoiding some of those things would be very good too. Lots of triggers out there.
Even something like instant oatmeal will there be a difference between the US instant oatmeal and the EU instant oatmeal?
Oh, most certainly. Artificial flavors, artificial colors, stabilizers, different stuff, yes.
So while we're on that subject, why doesn't, if you're a food company, let's say you're Kellogg's or whoever, and you're making these you have to make a different product for the United States and for Europe because Europe has these strong regulations from keeping poisons out of food that the United States doesn't have, why not just make them all the safe kind?
That's a really good question, and I'm not really sure, because when you look at, Rob sent me last week a photo from, I think it's Food Babe's website, but looking at the Dorito bag, the colors that they put into Doritos Cool Ranch America is red, blue, or red 40, blue 1, and yellow 5. So it's a toxic swill. And in the UK, they use annatto, which is a natural plant extract yellow color. Makes a lot more sense to use annatto to me, but maybe it's slightly more expensive because they have arrangements between the Monsanto and the other chemical poisoners and the food giants because they're all supplied by the same chemical manufacturers. So there could be some nice little agreement where the poisons are free, so they don't even have to pay to poison us. Who knows?
Yeah, slightly more expensive if you only look at the short-term costs and you don't look at the overall costs of the long-term health of the population.
Right, but the food companies making profit, they don't care about the long-term cost of the population. That's the government and our public health initiative issues.
Well, you're listening to Dr. Fred Harvey on Health and Nutrition here on 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. We're going to go back to the phone lines if you'd like to call in, and the number is 813-239-9663. Happy Martin Luther King Jr. Day to everyone, and Jackie is on Clearwater Beach. Hi, Jackie.
Hi,
Jackie.
I've called in. Hi, Dr. Harvey. I want to thank you for volunteering your time like this for the wellness of everyone listening. I mean, it's very kind of you to donate your time.
I'm here to serve.
You do. You care about the health and wellness of all of us, and that's a beautiful thing. So thank you.
You're welcome.
I was listening to the lady that called in about Raynaud's disease.
Yes.
And I was wondering, I'm very interested in the ability of massage to heal us, And when you have something that working on your blood vessels like that, do you believe in massage as a remedy for a lot of what ails us? Do you think it's helpful?
I believe that hands-on human healing work is the basis of all healing. It starts with love, and that's where we grow from. And so anytime another human lays hands on another, we're getting a definite benefit. And one of the things that happens with Raynaud's phenomenon in disease is a discommunication inside the body, and massage helps to reestablish a balance in that internal communication.
I hope she's still listening, and I hope that the older lady who's suffering from this either trusts her or someone to give her a healing massage, or she can, of course, go and get one.
Yes.
I'm a big believer in massage, and like you said, the healing ability of our own hands. You know, I've massaged my children since the day they were born.
So have I. It's a wonderful thing to do.
Yes, and I have one more question if you guys have time.
What's that?
It's not really a question, it's a concern. You touched on all these additives. I'm a middle school teacher.
Yes.
And I watch the children, and I watch my own children eat these disgusting foods, which are filled with all of these toxins.
Yes.
And I'm outspoken, so I tell them, that stuff is really bad for you. But if I deny my children, they might want it more. So what I do is I try to have lots of healthy foods around the house. I never buy that stuff.
Right.
I don't provide it, but they get it on their own.
Sure they do.
I mean, my son can drive wherever he wants and buy whatever he wants now.
Yes.
Yeah, 17.
And that's a huge challenge.
Right. When I see the kids eating this stuff at school, which does affect their attention spans and their ability to learn, and they are, in many cases, malnutritioned because they'll eat a bag of that disgusting stuff for breakfast.
Right.
So I'm just very concerned with these corporations that, and you're right, they don't care about the long-term health of our population. They care about their short-term profits.
Right.
So it's very concerning. And as a teacher, in the last 28 years, I've seen a change in our children.
Yes, and you're going to see more unless we stop feeding people things like soybean oil. A recent article shows us that soybean oil is a hugely adverse non-food substance. If you think about it, the big agriculture companies grow monocrop, poisoned, genetically modified, Roundup sprayed nastiness in the Midwest, harvest it, squeeze the heck out of it, cook it down, and make these oils that concentrate pesticides and herbicides, and an oil that we shouldn't be eating. Recent study has proven that soybean oil has adverse consequences of obesity, diabetes, insulin resistance, fatty liver, and brain damage. It's proven that genetic modifications are occurring in the hypothalamus. That's the master gland center of the brain that tells everything else what to do and how to communicate. There are changes occurring. Now, we don't biopsy human brains, so these are mouse brains, but they're mammals too, and mammal brains tend to have the same physiology in a lot of ways. So we're looking at mouse brain damage from soybean oil. It doesn't matter whether it's been genetically modified to remove what science has considered the less beneficial oil. Even that way, it's still causing the problem. Coconut oil, in the comparative quotes placebo or control oil, did nothing to that same area. And the problem is that it decreases oxytocin, and oxytocin is the bonding, trust, love, generosity chemical. Could it be that soybean oil for 30 years is causing the divide in our nation and decreasing trust and increasing the isolation?
The divisiveness.
Yes.
The lack of empathy.
Yes, so read labels and look for soybean oil. We need to get it out.
Yeah. I'm seeing everything you just described in students over the last 28 years that I've been teaching.
Yes.
The lack of empathy, the lack of generosity, all of these ill health effects. And So, yeah, thank you. We're going to look at our labels. We're going to make sure we don't have soybean oil in there or colors.
Yes.
And additives and preservatives. And we have to take our health into our own hands.
I agree.
We cannot trust our government to keep us healthy. They're all about profit.
We have to trust ourselves to read those labels and do the right thing for ourselves, because it's a decision every time we put something in our mouths. And that soybean oil is everywhere, including vitamins. Look at the label of your vitamin D, your vitamin A, and your vitamin E, and make sure there's no soybean oil. If it's not an organic vitamin, you know that's nasty GMO soybean oil polluting your good vitamin.
Jackie, thanks so much for the call, and thanks for teaching. We appreciate that. And we get another text in that comes from Diane, and she says, your thoughts on the blood type diet.
Well, that's an interesting concept. I haven't heard in quite a while. Dr. Diadamo wrote a book on that back in, I think, like 99, and it's very interesting. And he's a naturopathic doctor who had his naturopathic students do research, volumes of research, back into the 20s. And one of the reasons he did it is that his father was a biochemist who had been somewhat involved, I believe, in blood typing. And one of the things they discovered is that kidney bean lectins, the proteins from kidney beans, will actually cause type O blood to agglutinate or clump. And that was one of the first times we found blood typing, because it doesn't make type A and type B clump. And so anybody with type O blood probably shouldn't eat kidney beans, because it just may make your blood clump. Not a good thing. And so there are many other things they found in there that seem to correlate with different blood types. It's not exact science. And so there are some good things to think about there if you were to read the book and apply some of it. But it's more generic. Because even though kidney bean lectins cause type O blood to agglutinate, lectins from beans affect all blood types. And so we really have to tailor the diet more to what we feel about it. When we eat that bean, like I know that kidney beans and pinto beans do cause problems for my digestion, but black beans and lentils don't. So you have to actually feel your way through the diet, paying attention, keeping a food and symptom diary, and figuring out what's really true about that blood type diet for you.
Well, thanks for that question, and I want to let people know that you're listening to 88.5 FM, WMNF Tampa, WMNF.org. This is the Health and Nutrition Show. Dr. Fred Harvey is answering your questions. If you call in at 813-239-9663, we're going to also answer questions from email at dj@wmnf.org. We have a question, Dr. Harvey, from Anonymous, who is asking about cholesterol levels. And Anonymous says, the doctor wants me to take Lipitor, but I'm concerned about doing so. Cholesterol is HDL 57, non-HDL 166, LDL 145, total 223, and the calcium level is 315, and the CHOL to HDLC ratio is 3.9.
So that's a good question. Those are really not that bad cholesterol numbers, depending on what your risk is. If your LDL goes over 130, you probably want to start thinking about some dietary changes. I'm not sure what the calcium level means, because the range for calcium levels in my laboratory is 8 to 10. And so 315 is a really weird number, so hard to comment on that. But with a total cholesterol of 223, LDL of 145, and an HDL of 57, you've got some really good numbers to work with, actually. I would suggest that 30 minutes of exercise a day, fiber, increase fiber to 20 to 30 grams of fiber a day, and decrease the amount of processed food and simple sugars and processed starches like white bread. Get rid of that stuff and you'll see this change.
Exercise, how about walking? Is walking good exercise?
Walking is wonderful. And a recent study just showed us that walking is associated with longevity. We can turn back many of the lifestyle illness indicators, insulin resistance, things like that, using intermittent walking training, high-intensity intermittent walking training. So that means you walk 3 minutes at 70% of your maximum and 3 minutes at 40% of your maximum. And you do this in six sets or more. So you get about 30 minutes of exercise of this intensity interval training and just walking. You don't need to go to the gym. And the study showed that 50 minutes a week is sufficient to get results, and you don't get much more increase in the results going much beyond that. So twice a week, 30 minutes, doing high-intensity interval walk training.
John from Lake Wales, you're on the air. What would you like to ask Dr. Harvey?
Well, it looks like the planet is on its way to becoming uninhabitable for humanity. No matter what you eat, you might want to comment on that.
I will. In fact, have hope because though the planet is challenged and we've created much of the challenge, we have the solutions too. There's a great movie going to be coming out this spring. I've seen test, the demo run, essentially. It's called Kiss the Ground. Watch for Kiss the Ground. This is a movie of hope for our planet, how we can actually pull back the desertified land and regrow green and populate our world with vibrance.
And also the 50 forever chemicals, rather the 5,000 forever chemicals that have been reported in the news that's in the water and they can't get it out that causes a lot of diseases.
Yes.
I'm sure you know a little bit about that.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like a hopeless situation up, down, in any direction that you go.
Well, I don't think any situation is hopeless. I'm the doctor of hope, and I'm going to tell you that you can change your reality simply by thinking about it. Think that it is hopeful. Think that the world is going to be saved because we are going to do that. Because if you look around at all the people that are working for global change, you will be astonished. Read Nicholas Kristof's article from December 28th last year about this world is the best year, or this year was the best year ever. He's written that article for the last 5 years in a row because every year it keeps getting better. We have to stop focusing on the bad and understand there is so much a world of good out here looking for growth and opportunity. Every one of these challenges is an opportunity for us to grow. And so when you think about all the toxins in the environment, be proactive. Eat organic food. Support organic growers. Take detoxifying substances like N-acetylcysteine, homeopathic drainage remedies, lots of fiber so you can excrete the toxins, lots of water so you can excrete the toxins, lots of exercise so you can sweat out the toxins. We can fix our world, and we start with our bodies because our bodies are resilient. The liver is so powerful at getting rid of these toxins. You don't have to worry if you support your liver.
Well, thank you for that call. And let's go now to Susan in Sarasota. Hi, Susan.
Hi. Dr. Harvey, you are so brilliant. You know so much. You're very broad-based. It's a gift. I try never to miss your program.
Thank you.
I was calling with a question, and also another one came up by something someone said. I'm trying to heal a low thyroid without taking medication at this point. And I've heard mixed reviews on ashwagandha, bacopa, and rhodiola. I hear it can be supportive to the thyroid because it helps the adrenals, and I hear it isn't a good idea. That's question one. What do you think of those?
So I think they're great adaptogenic herbs. I am cautious with rhodiola because it can be really hyper-stimulating for the adrenal glands. I love ashwagandha and bacopa. Ashwagandha is in one of my favorite thyroid support formulas. But antioxidants, protein is very important. You need to get good quality protein. And iodine. So iodized sea salt is my recommendation for all of my patients to use because we get a little bit of iodine every day from that, and that protects us from the radioactive iodine that we're still dealing with from the Fukushima disaster that continues to put out nasty stuff and is still in the ground where we grow our food in America because it landed on our bread belt.
Do you like the bacopa?
I do, yes. I think it's a good herb also.
Could be supportive to the thyroid.
Yes.
Okay. I never even heard of this, but I do have leaky aortic valve that they're watching, and I've always had a slight mitral valve prolapse, and I don't know if I've got a little something going on with the mitral valve, and I do take probiotics. I never thought there would be a bad thing.
There's not much problem unless you've got a lot of illness. The biggest problem I've seen is with people with ascites or liver problems. They can't take probiotics very well.
Well, thank you for that call, Susan. We're out of time. Thank you.
One more thing to say. Somebody's asking about organic soybean oil. No, it's soybean oil. It doesn't matter organic or not. It's bad for your brain.
Well, thank you for all the questions. Everyone who called in, thanks so much, Dr. Harvey, for coming in all the way from Sarasota today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sean, for hosting today.
Happy Martin Luther King Day, and you're listening to WMNF Tampa, 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. You can also watch this show again and share it with your friends and family. It's on the WMNF News Facebook page. Thanks so much for listening. Happy Martin Luther King Day to everyone.